भूतले श्रीमते भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी इति नामिने नमस्ते सरस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्य देश तारिणे जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय We are reading chapter 39 from the 10th canto, Akrura's Vision. I'm going to read the summary description at the beginning, and then we have verse text 1 and text 2 today. So this chapter describes how Akrura informed Lord Krishna and Lord Balaram of Kamsa's plans and his activities in Mathura, what the gopis cried out in distress when Krishna left for Mathura, and also the vision of Lord Vishnu's abode that Akrura saw within the water of the Yamuna. When Krishna and Balaram offered Akrura great respect and comfortably seated him on a couch, he felt that all the desires he had reflected on while traveling to Vrindavan were now fulfilled. After the evening meal, Krishna asked Akrura whether his trip had been peaceful and whether he was well. The Lord also inquired about how Kamsa was behaving toward their family members, and finally he asked why Akrura had come. Akrura described how Kamsa had been persecuting the Yadavas, what Narada had told Kamsa, and how Kamsa had been treating Vasudeva cruelly. Akrura also spoke of Kamsa's desire to bring Krishna and Balaram to Mathura to kill them on the pretext of their seeing the bow sacrifice and engaging in a wrestling match. Krishna and Balaram laughed out loud when they heard this. They went to their father, Nanda, and informed him of Kamsa's orders. Nanda then issued an order to all the residents of Braja that they should collect various offerings for the king and prepare to go to Mathura. The young gopis were extremely upset to hear that Krishna and Balaram would be going to Mathura. They lost all external awareness and began to remember Krishna's pastimes. Condemning the Creator for separating them from him, they began to lament. They said that Akrura did not deserve his name, Akrura, cruel, since he was so cruel to be taking away their dearmost Krishna. It must be that fate is against us, they lamented, because otherwise the elders of Braja would have forbidden Krishna to leave. So let us forget our shyness and try to stop Lord Madhav from going. With these words, the young cowherd girls began to chant Krishna's names and cry. But even as they wept, Akrura began taking Krishna and Balaram to Mathura in his chariot. The cowherd men of Gokul followed behind on their wagons, and the young gopis also walked behind for some distance, but then they became placated by Krishna's glances and gestures and pacified by a message from him that said, I will return. With their minds completely absorbed in Krishna, the cowherd girls stood as still as a figures in a painting until they could no longer see the chariot's flag or the dust cloud being raised on the road. Then chanting Krishna's glories all the while, they despondently returned to their homes. Akrura halted the chariot at the bank of the Yamuna so Krishna and Balaram could perform a ritual of purification and drink some water. After the two lords had gotten back into the chariot, Akrura took their permission to bathe in the Yamuna. As he recited Vedic mantras, he was startled to see the two lords standing in the water. Akrura came out of the river and returned to the chariot where he saw the lords still sitting. Then he returned to the water to find out if the two figures he had seen there were real or not. What Akrura saw in the water was four-armed Lord Vasudev. His complexion was dark blue like a fresh rain cloud. He wore yellow garments and he lay on the lap of thousand-hooded Anantashesh. Lord Vasudev was receiving the prayers of perfected beings, celestial serpents and demons, and he was encircled by his personal attendants. Serving him were his many potencies such as Shri, Pushti and Ila, while Brahma and other demigods sang his praises. Akrura rejoiced at this vision and joining his palms in supplication, he began to pray to the Supreme Lord in a voice choked with emotion. So text 1. Shri Shuka Vacha. Sukhopavishtaha Paryanke. Ramakrishna Rumanitaha. Lebhe Manorathan Sarvan. Pathiyan Sachakaraha. Translation, Shukadeva Goswami said, having been honored so much by Lord Balaram and Lord Krishna, Akrura, seated comfortably on a couch, felt that all the desires he had contemplated on the road were now fulfilled. Text 2. Kim alabhyam bhagavati asanne shri niketane tathapi tatpararajam nahi vanchanti kinchana. Alabhyam is unattainable. Bhagavati, the Supreme Lord. Prasanne, being satisfied. Shri, of the Goddess of Fortune. Niketane, the resting place. Tatha api, nevertheless. Tat paraha, those who are devoted to him. Rajan, O King Parikshit, na, do not. He indeed, vanchanti, desire, kinchana, anything. Translation. My dear King, what is unattainable for one who has satisfied the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the shelter of the Goddess of Fortune? Even so, those who are dedicated to his devotional service never want anything from him. Om Agyanati Mirandasya Gyanandam Shalakaya Chakshuran Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Maha. So text 2 here contains a deep philosophical point. What is unattainable for one who has satisfied Krishna? Even so, those who are dedicated to his devotional service never want anything from him. So, nahi vanchanti kinchana. The desire here that is being referred to is material desire, not spiritual desire, because we can't be desireless. Material desires are not present in the pure devotees of Krishna. And there are many examples of this. Dhruva Maharaj says, kacham hi vichinvan api divyaratnam swami krutartho api varam naya. Swami krutartho asmi varam nayache. So I was looking for glass. Kacham hi vichinvan. Vichinvan is searching. So I was searching for glass. Api divyaratnam, but I have found this transcendental gem. Swami kutarthoti asmi. O Lord, I am fully satisfied. Artha kutartho. Prema pumartho mahan. The highest artha is prema for Krishna. And Guru Maharaj is saying, I'm fully satisfied. Varam nayache, I do not want any boon, any material boon. So this was in response to Vishnu's offering him benedictions, any material benedictions he wanted. Prahlad Maharaj says in the 7th canto, Aham yakamo tvadbhaktastvam ca swami anapashrayah na anyathe havayor artho rajasevakayoriva. I am a kama bhakta, unmotivated devotee. Unmotivated means materially not motivated. Tvam ca swami anapashraya. And you are also my master without any motivation. Na anyathe havayor artho. There is no other meaning to the two of us, to the relationship between the two of us. Rajasevakayoriva. Just like a king and his servant. No other meaning. So, unmotivated devotional service. But on the other hand, the same pure devotees have unlimited, infinite desires also, spiritual desires. His Grace Chaitanya Charandas explains infinite longings for the infinite. That's an essay he wrote. Infinite longings on the for the infinite. So, have spiritual desires. Krishna, Arjuna says in the 10th chapter, Vistarena atmano yogam vibhutim cha janardana bhuyah kathaya truptir hi shrunavatu nasti me amrutam. This is Arjuna requesting Krishna to explain his vibhutis, all the different opulences. And he's saying, shrunavatu nasti me amrutam, I'm not satisfied. Say it again, bhuyah kathaya, say it again. Truptir hi, not satisfaction, shrunavatu nasti. I'm hearing, but I'm not satisfied. I want to hear more and more and more and more. So it's like an addiction, a spiritual affliction, spiritual addiction. I want to hear more and more and more. Kathaya truptir hi shrunavatu nasti me amrutam. And, you know, so many examples. Right? The Bhagavatam is full of what Nagaraj Prabhu once explained, stuck in my mind, spiritual madness. There are two levels of madness. You can be materially mad or you can be spiritually mad. There is no intermediate stage of sanity. And so the devotees have these infinite longings for the infinite. So this last chapter was a real experience for me, hearing from the devotees here speaking about different philosophical points. And, you know, they give you the schedule a month in advance, so I knew that I was going to speak in a month, and I knew the verses I was going to speak these two. And so I had thought of all these points. But as time went along, all the devotees, they covered each of these points. This is a disadvantage of getting to the end of the chapter, that all the philosophical points you wanted to cover are done. But I still have something to say. So what I'm going to do, because we finished the chapter before, is I will try to summarize it by putting it in context of a key philosophical point from our scriptures. And this is from the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Where Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explains to Sanatana Goswami at Varanasi. Sanatana Goswami has escaped from prison and he's gone to Varanasi to meet Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And then there is a lengthy discourse, and in one of those verses, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explains. I just came across this yesterday, let me see if I remember this. Veda Shastra kahe sambandha abhidheya prayojana. Krishna, Krishna, Bhakti, Prema, Tina, Mahadhana. So Mahaprabhu is explaining the essence of all the Vedic scriptures can be divided into three aspects. Sambandha, Abhidheya, Prayojana. Sambandha refers to the knowledge of our position and the knowledge of Krishna's position. And our relationship with, the relationship between the two. Abhidheya means the practice of devotional service, Krishna Bhakti. So Sambandha is Krishna, Abhideya is Krishna Bhakti, and Prayojana is the ultimate purpose, the goal, and that is Prema. That's what this verse is saying. And these are the three Mahadhana, riches of life, not money, not stock, not bank, degrees, beauty, strength, you know, young youth, children, society, what is it? Society, friendship and love. Not these three, the other three. The other three are Krishna, Krishna Bhakti and Krishna Prema. The other three riches. And I was struck by how this chapter can be categorized into these three. Sambandha, Abhideya and Prayojana. So I'll try to explain that. So Akrura starts in that chapter by saying that he's just a conditioned soul. Kim maya acharitam bhadram, kim taptam paramam tapaha, kim vathapi arhate dattam, what's the last yad drakshyami adya keshavam. He's thinking about his good fortune. What pious deeds have I performed? Kim maya acharitam bhadram. What severe austerities have I done? Kim taptam paramam tapaha. Then, kim vathapi arhate dattam, what have I worship, what worship have I performed? What have I given away in charity? Yad drakshami adya keshavam, that I'm going to see Krishna today. So he's taking the position of this materialist, ignorant materialist. Because Krishna refutes each of these four in the Bhagavad Gita, which is interesting that he presents, even the sequence that is presented in the same. Naham vedair, not by pious activities, that means, you know, the karmakandi rituals in the Vedas. Na tapasa, not by austerities. Na dhanena, not by charity. Na cha ejaya, not by worship. Shakya evam vidha drashtum, drashtvanasi mamat yatha. Can you see me standing in front of you as you are seeing now, the two-handed form of Krishna? This is in the end of the 11th chapter. And so the point is that, no, none of these four processes can actually lead to seeing Krishna, right? It's only by pure devotional service. And so Akrura is thinking like this, and he's saying, well, I'm just a conditioned materialist, how am I able to see him? Then he says, enough of these thoughts, I am just in the river of time, and by chance one can reach the banks, one can get the darshan of Krishna. So he says, okay, that's also part of Sambandha Gyan, is not to focus on one's own miserable situation so much that one gets so consumed with one's situation that one forgets Krishna. So he then, you know, gets rid of those thoughts and focuses on Krishna. And then he describes Krishna's glories. And it's like reading the Bhagavad Gita in a concise version. All the main philosophical points are there in Akrura's description of Krishna. It's just quite amazing. So he says, you know, how he's the witness, upadrashta, and he's a witness of the material cause and effect. He's above all the material, his own maya, all the material activities, how he's the supreme spiritual master. And then there is a verse I like very much. Let's see if I remember. Yasya khilameva habihi sumangalaihi vacho vimishta gunakarma janmabihi prananti shumbhanti punanti vaijaga. And what's the last one? Yastat viraktaha shabashobhanamataha. So he's describing Krishna's position. This is Sambandha Gyan. By explaining the words, the significance of the words that are used to glorify Krishna. Because Krishna's glories, they get rid of all sinful reactions. Habihi. Okay. Yasya akhila ameva habihi. All the sins are destroyed by Krishna's, by hearing Krishna's pastimes. Sumangalaihi. They create all auspiciousness. Vacho, the words, Vimishra, Guna Karma Janmavi, this is the Krishna's pastimes. And then Prananti, Shumbhanti Punanti Vaijagat. Krishna's Leelas, it's quite interesting the way it's described, they give life, Prananti, Shumbhanti, beautify, and Punanti, purify, Vaijagat, the whole universe. And then the flip side is if the words are devoid of Krishna's glories, whatever words are being spoken, then shava shobhanamataha, they are decorations on a dead corpse, on a corpse. So, you know, the contrast is being provided that the words that are used to glorify Krishna's, you know, janma lila, karma lila, these are transcendental and they purify and free one from all sins. So he is describing all these, he's giving us Sambandha Gyan. And then we come to Abhidheya, acting on that knowledge. And the way Akrura acts on it is he meditates. And this is our process, remembering, constantly remembering Krishna, never forgetting him. So, manmanabhava madbhakto, the famous verse. So, Akrura meditates on different parts of Krishna's body. And so when we do the darshan of the deity, I feel that this would be useful for somebody who's trying to absorb himself in darshan, in meditating on Krishna's form. So he starts with his feet. And the feet are referred to as the goal of the mystic yogis. They provide liberation. So he first talks about the body part, and then talks about the benefit. Then he describes in detail how people were benefited. This is the logic of the presentation. So for the feet, you know, they provide liberation. Then he mentions how Shiva, Brahma, they all worship Krishna's feet. I was reminded of this verse from the 11th canto. Deyam sada paribhavagnam abhishtadoham. Akrura, from the last chapter. I'm talking about the last chapter, summarizing the last chapter, for those who came in late. So it destroys all material inauspiciousness. Bhavabdipotam, it is a boat to cross the material, the river of material existence. This is the glory of Krishna's feet. So he glorifies Krishna's feet. Then he goes to Krishna's hand. And he's meditating how, so in the, for the feet, he's meditating how I'll pay obeisances to Krishna's feet. So that is also Abhideya, you know, acting. Then he meditates on Krishna's hand. And he thinks how Krishna's hand will, you know, he'll put his hand on his head when he's, you know, paying dandavats. And then he describes that Krishna's hand removes all fear. Bhaktanam abhayam karaha. It relieves one from all fear. So that's the benefit, Krishna's hand. For the devotee. And then he describes how that hand was offered charity by Bali Maharaj, and how, you know, that hand wipes the perspiration of the gopis and becomes fragrant. And for us, Krishna's hand holds the flute, you can see on the altar, his hands are holding the flute. And then Shankaracharya actually says, glorifying the Bhagavad Gita, prapanna parijataya totra vetreka panaye Jnana Mudraya Krishnaya Gita Amrita Duhe Namaha. So the, when Krishna is speaking the Bhagavad Gita to Arjun, he's holding in one hand a whip to control the horses, and in the other hand is in Jnana Mudra. So for us the significance is he is giving us knowledge of who we are, Sambandha Jnana. Then, so the feet, then the hands, see he goes to the smile, Krishna's smile. This guy is smiling on the altar here. And Krishna's smile, it described, it purifies one of all contamination and gives it complete bliss. Complete bliss. For the devotees, Krishna's smiling face is the 10th canto which we are reading, the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So this is an appropriate way to express it, because the 10th canto is supposed to get rid of all doubts, dispel our doubts as we advance in devotional service. Then, after the smile, Akrura meditates on how Krishna's mighty arms will embrace him. And by that, all the sinful reactions, from the karmic reactions, material bondage will fall away. Coming from fruit of activities will fall away. That's described. So Krishna's mighty arms, actually in the chapter before, or maybe in the same chapter, Krishna uses those arms to kill Keshi. He puts his left arm inside the mouth of Keshi. It's very hot. Keshi's teeth fall out, and then the arm expands, and then Keshi chokes and dies. So Krishna's arms are mighty. He's killed many warriors, powerful demons with his arms. So, but those arms can, when they embrace Akrura, will destroy Akrura's material bondage. That is the meditation. And then finally Akrura ends with hearing from Krishna's lotus lips the words Tata. Tata is a very intimate form of address, my dear Akrura. And he says, once I hear those words, all my life's purposes will be fulfilled. So this is Abhideya, meditation on Krishna's different, Krishna's form, and how that relates to us. So by hearing Krishna's words, my dear Akrura, all his life's purposes will be fulfilled. Krishna uses the same form of address for Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita. Nahi kalyanakrut kaschit durgatim tata gacchati. Tata, he addresses very intimate form. My dear Arjun. So these are the ways in which Akrura meditates. But then, when we come to the prayojan, that's the goal of life, and this is the beauty of devotional service, that the sadhan and the sadhana are the same. All Akrura's things that he was meditating, they come to pass. Just exactly as he was meditating. So the sadhana was the meditation, and the sadhya is also what was happening in the meditation. So the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra is the meditation, right? But then the goal also is the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, because Krishna is in the, it is the holy names. So that's the philosophical point there, that the sadhya and the sadhana are the same. So, you know, while we meditate on these meditations, the Abhideya part of this chapter, I was reminded of this other verse. Prahlad Maharaj speaks it again. Prabhupada liked to quote this. Naisham, Naisham matir tavaduru kramangrim sprashati anarthapagamo yadartha mahiyasam padarajobhisekam nishkinchananam navrunitayabat. So these lotus feet of Krishna, which get rid of all the anarthas in heart, naisham matir tavad, the mind will never be focused on these lotus feet of Krishna, even though they are capable of getting rid of all our contaminations. Till when yavad, so tavad, so till mahiyasam padarajobhishekam, till one does not accept the dust of the lotus feet of the pure devotees. So that's the logic. So we are actually, our process goes through the spiritual master. We accept the dust of the lotus feet of Srila Prabhupada on our heads. When we do that, then we can get connected. Our minds can get fixed in the lotus feet of Krishna. That's the philosophy. And so similarly, all these, you know, we want Prabhupada to be happy with us, we want him to smile at us, we want his hand on our heads, and so on. Pleasing the spiritual master pleases Krishna. So, in the last few minutes, I wanted to discuss another journey. So, Akrura was on a journey, a day-long trip from Mathura to Vrindavan, and he was meditating on Krishna. So, I'm going to discuss another journey away from Vrindavan. Any guesses whose journey? Away from Vrindavan. Prabhupada, yes. So, Prabhupada, as we know, was on the Jaladuta for several days. He left Vrindavan. And in leaving Vrindavan, he maintained a personal diary. And in the diary, he wrote many different things, but he also wrote two poems. And one of them is Bhagavan Krishnera Pada Padme Prarthana. Was written on September 13, 1965. What I was struck with was the similarities between Akrura's presentation and Prabhupada's presentation in the logical flow of thought. But also, when I saw those similarities, I realized, you know, why we call him His Divine Grace. Prabhupada is... So the Akrura and Prahlad Maharaj, these are descriptions of pure devotees in the Srimad Bhagavatam. But Prabhupada is a person, Bhagavat. These devotees are far removed from us in time and space, but Prabhupada is just a few years ago. And we have his disciples in our midst. And Prabhupada came to the West, he founded these temples, he gave us the opportunity to come worship in these temples. So he is, in a sense, much closer to us than all these different devotees. But they are all similar in many ways. So if we look at Prabhupada's poem, he also has the same kind of sentiments. He starts with, I guess he doesn't really start with it, but this, for example, this is in Bengali. Tumi mora chira sati bhuliya mayara lati hai achi janma janmantare aji punaha e suyoga yadi haya yoga yoga tabe pari tunhe milibare. Oh Lord Krishna, Prabhupada prays, you are my eternal companion. Somehow forgetting about you, I have been suffering the kicking of Maya for many, many births. If today the chance to meet you occurs again, surely I will be able to rejoin you. So, but then there are some dissimilarities. So Akrura is going to journey, going to Vrindavan, and he's saying, how I will remember, how I'll meet Krishna. How I'll meet Krishna, and he just is thinking of what will transpire. But Prabhupada is actually remembering his pastimes with Krishna on the boat. So that's this next poem. Verse 8 and 9 are quite striking. Tomara milane bhai abar se sukhe pai gocharane ghuri dinabhura kata vane chuta chuti vane khai luta luti sei dina kabe habe mora. Prabhupada says, oh my dear brother, he's talking to Krishna. Oh my dear brother, in your company I will experience great joy once again. It's similar to the meditation of Akrura. Wandering about the pastures and fields, I will pass the entire day with you in tending the cows. Running and frolicking with you throughout the many forests of Raja, I will enjoy our pastime of stealing and eating one another's lunch. When, oh when, will that day be mine? So he says that. But in the next verse he says, Aji se suvidha hala, tomara smarana bhela, bada asha dakilama tai. So he's saying, Aji, today, se suvidha hala tomara smarana bhela. That remembrance of being with you came to me in a very nice way. So he's praying for it, but actually he is remembering his pastimes with Krishna. That's what this meaning is. Today that remembrance of being with you came to me in a very nice way. Feeling great longing, I loudly called out to you. O Lord Krishna, only because I am your eternal servant do I desire your association so much. Except for you, I have no other refuge. O brothers, the Supreme Lord Krishna will personally become your virtue. That's how the poem starts. Krishna tava punya have bhai. So, Prabhupada went to the West to give Krishna to others. While Akrura was going to meet Krishna, Prabhupada was bringing Krishna with him on that boat to give to others so that everybody else could become like Akrura and see Krishna someday. And this is our great fortune. This is the amazing position of Srila Prabhupada. So I want to conclude with this verse from the 11th canto that describes the Shadbhuja avatar. I was meditating on it and then I realized that verse also applies to Prabhupada. So that verse describes Vishnu Tattva, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Lord Ram and Lord Krishna, but it also describes Prabhupada, which is appropriate because the qualities of Krishna are present in the qualities of his pure devotee, and that's why the pure devotee is Sakshad Hari. So the verse is Tyaktva Sudus Tyaja Surepsita Raja Lakshmim Dharmishta Arya Vachasayat Agadaranyam Maya Mrugam Daita Epsita Manmadhavat Vande Mahapurushite Charanaravindam. The meaning is, and it describes Mahaprabhu, Ram and Krishna, all their renunciation, the first line, Tyaktva Sudus Tyaja. That which is very difficult to give up, they gave up. Krishna gave up Mathura, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave up Vishnupriya, and Lord Ram gave up Ayodhya. Dharmishta, because they were morally upright, they wanted to preserve the principles of religion. Dharmishta Arya Vachasa, on the orders of a superior authority, in the case of Lord Ram, it was Dasharath. In the case of Lord Krishna, it was Vasudev, his father, who took him from Mathura to Vrindavan. And in the case of Mahaprabhu, it was a curse from a Brahmin who was offended that he didn't get to see his kirtan, confidential kirtan. Yad Agadaranyam, they went to the forest. Krishna went to Vrindavan, which is the forest. Ram went to the forest. And Mahaprabhu went also to the Jharikhand forest. Right? At least. So, and then the third line is Maya Mrugam Daita Epsitam Anvadhavat. So, Lord Ram ran after the golden deer for Sita Devi, to fulfill Sita Devi's request. Daita Epsitam. And then Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ran after the souls in material existence, running after Maya out of the compassion of his heart. And Krishna is actually himself the Maya Mruga. Yoga Maya is Krishna's potency, and Radharani is the original energy, and she controls Krishna as if he were a deer. And so Krishna runs around in Vrindavan. So that's the meaning of the three. But then it also applies to Prabhupada. So if you think about Prabhupada, Tyaktvasu Dustyaja Surepsita Raja Lakshmi. Prabhupada gave up his business. He let it die. He was not very interested in it. You know, he could have been really affluent and successful, but he kind of let his business die. Or he could say he gave up his family. He had taken a vow never to take sannyas, but he gave it up. It was sudustyaja, difficult to give up, but he gave it up. His wife and children. Or he could say, and I was thinking this, that he gave up Delhi. Delhi is the capital of India. Rajya Lakshmim, wealthy capital of India. And Prabhupada did try to preach there, but he gave that up. Dharmishta, because he was loyal to his spiritual master, Arya Vachasa, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's order to go to the West. So, weighing that order, he went to the forest of New York City, which is a forest that's worse than forest, most forests. Because in the forest you can get some fruit, some water from the spring, some food, nuts, whatever. But Prabhupada is coming to New York City, it's cold, it's hot, no protection, no money. So that's... And it's a forest full of human animals, which is even more scary. So, Yad Agad Aranyam. And then what is the third line? Maya Mrugam, of course, it's the same. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy. He's running after the lost souls, not only in his time, but even now. Prabhupada's mercy is running after the lost souls in this Maya, in this material world. And that's why we offer respects, respectful obeisances to him when we come into the temple. Vande Mahapurushante Charanaravindam. So, I'll close with that. Comments, questions? Pushkar Prabhu and then Trivikram Prabhu.
No question. I was just going to say Mahapurushiko Bhavan, the second canto where Sukadeva Goswami addresses Parikshit Maharaj in 2.1.12 or so, or Mahapurushiko Bhava, because you are Mahapurusha also, you were just saying, so I just thought of that the devotee is not exempt, he can be called Mahapurusha, according to Sukadeva Goswami. Because you are Mahapurusha, then I'm going to tell you all these things.
Thank you.
Comment on a half question. when Srila Prabhupada wrote that poem, "Today you have come to me in a nice way," Indradyumna Maharaj was given a lecture and he said that actually Krishna appeared in that boat. Srila Prabhupada had a heart attack and he was massaging Srila Prabhupada's heart. And he said, "You'd be okay, everything would be all right." See, and this was very confidential. He says that he heard that from Bhagatji or somebody like this, told him, but Prabhupada told Bhagatji not to tell his disciples. But he said to them, "I'm going to let everybody know. You know, whatever happens, happens." So that's the point. The other one is when you said, you read about Krishna touching the gopi's face and his hand became fragrant. But I'm thinking, Krishna's hand is already fragrant. See, his hand is already fragrant. So when he touches the gopi's face, he got some other fragrance, some different fragrance. I was thinking, what's your thought on that?
Yeah, I agree with that entirely. These topics are a bit too high for me, but yeah. I agree with that. His hand is originally fragrant, but then he, when he wipes the perspiration, gets a different fragrance. It does. Anything else? Thank you very much. Nitya Gaur Premanande. Hare Krishna.